Okay. Good morning, everybody. It's great to see you. It's so great to be back. There was a wonderful retreat that I co-led in Mar de Hadá in Mexico, which I hope that someday each of you will be able to experience that. And so here we are. In the Torah of Shemot, names, second book of the Torah, book of Exodus. It starts with the names of the children of Israel who came out of Egypt with Jacob, each coming with her own household. So this parsha blows me away because it's there's some way that the meditation practice that we have enables me to see this book fresh every year. And I think many people do that even without a meditation practice, that there's something in the nature of studying Torah that is freshly shocking, freshly revealing as we come around the yearly cycle again each year. So this parsha contains an incredible number of teachings regarding this life and our practice, and that symbiosis between this life and the Torah, our practice and the Torah, is pretty amazing because the practice allows us to see things we've never seen in Torah, and the Torah gives us teachings that we need to be able to walk this life, this path of life. So we hope that these teachings that we get from Torah will help us hit the mark with our actions so that there can be some ease, some clarity in this confusing life, and that the actions can make a dent in a seemingly impervious world. So the parsha begins by noting that the generation of Joseph and his brothers has perished, a kind reminder that we are impermanent and deeply connected to those who have come and gone before us. And a new king arises over Egypt who knows not Joseph. In a literal sense, the king of Egypt is the king of narrow places, right? Egypt is Mitzrayim, the tight straits of this life, a place of thankless labor and constriction. So we inquire in our meditation, what is rising within each of us right now that rules us? That's the Pharaoh in us that rules us in our particular narrow places. What do we find when we sit in silence together, week after week, year after year, moment after moment, and watch what is arising? Is there open-heartedness or planning lunch? Is it being with the breath or this afternoon's to-do list? Check it out. Is there desire, wanting something more, aversion, pushing something away, restlessness like wild mind, or sleepiness like a dull mind, judgment or doubt? All good, good noticing, as Sheila Weinberg would say. Our practice is to notice what we want more of and what we wish we could push away. We watch what arises in the mind and the heart, and then drop into the body to see how it lives there below words. Or vice versa, we experience sensations in the body and watch how they birth endless narratives in the mind. We have to use words like heart, mind, body, but really there's no separate parts, right? Only flow. In a meditation community like this one, there is safety and trust that allows us to be known in kindness. And when we're awake to what is arising within and without, it can flow into fresh action, action that feels to me like hits the mark. Changes lives, saves lives, as we will see in this week's parsha. The new Pharaoh freaks out over the growing population of the Israelites that may team up with Egypt's enemies, and so he ruthlessly condemns them to hard labor. Anyone here know their own internal taskmasters? You can give them a loving wink. I see you. Then Pharaoh decrees that all firstborn Hebrew baby boys must be thrown in the Nile to prevent the further spread of the Israelites. So the opening of the parasha shows how five women changed the course of history by paying close attention and taking fresh action. They change a potential death sentence for the baby Moses into a literal river of life. First, the two midwives, Shifra and Puah, deliver the baby boy from his mother, Yocheved. And in defiance to the Pharaoh's proclamation to kill the firstborn baby boys, they defy the death sentence and they set the baby afloat in a waterproofed basket made of reeds from the River Nile and waterproof bitumen. And there, the Pharaoh's daughter notices the basket and draws it out of the water, which is the name Moshe, drawing out. And the word in Hebrew for drawing out is Moshe, to draw out. So Pharaoh's daughter saves his life, even perhaps risking her own. I love that a non-Jewish young woman from the highest caste of life in ancient Egypt intervenes to save what will become the Jewish people. We really, really are interconnected. Then his sister Miriam offers the Pharaoh's daughter a nursemaid for the baby boy, which of course is Yocheved, Moshe's birth mom. And Moshe grows up in the Pharaoh's court, in the seat of privilege, but doesn't forget his origins. And as an adult, he sees an Egyptian taskmaster beating an Israelite slave. And in his rage, he kills the taskmaster and so must flee. He arrives in Midian and marries Zipporah, the daughter of wisdom, whose father is the shaman, Jethro. Jethro tutors Moshe in paying attention to his surroundings, namely watching over the sheep day in and day out, and perhaps watching his sense doors moment by moment, what he's seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. Moses spends years in a deep desert meditation as he keeps track of his thoughts and sensations and watches the sensations and thoughts come and go in years-long silent desert meditation. A meditation retreat that's led by Jethro, his father-in-law, and Zipporah, his wife. He learns to pay exquisite attention to the moment, guarding his sense doors as thoughts arise, abide, and pass in the mind, heart, body. He practices showing up to the moment with all his senses. In my own experience of the Sinai, as you've sometimes heard me talk about, in the 70s, there was nothing there. There was a lot. Almost all, everything was deep silence and lots of not knowing. And to us, what seemed to be an empty desert with an occasional acacia tree. No roads, no electricity, no water, no buildings, and a culture of Bedouins to care for each other and anyone lost, like we quickly became. Helping the stranger seemed to be on the top of their list, because you can't survive there without helping each other, as we can't really hear either. When I ventured to take my group of friends through the Sinai Desert after I had experienced a few hikes, we climbed over the saddle of a mountain and immediately got lost. And what we didn't yet know was a Bedouin was like a dot on the horizon. And after an hour or so of walking, that tiny dot became a Bedouin man who turned around in his tracks and walked with us for several days through the desert. with an occasional jaunt on a camel through the wadis, stopping at invisible-seeming secret watering holes and golden pear orchards. And he got us safely back over the mountain and refused any remuneration. So here's Moshe wandering through the desert, and he comes upon a bush that is on fire. And paying close attention, he notices the bush is burning, but not being consumed. Wait, what? That's a fundamental teaching of our practice. Yeah? We can stay awake. We can pay close enough attention to a reality that is continually changing, that is actually an ephemeral, flickering flame. Can we pay attention to a reality that is a flow of being, that is overflowing with love and fear, kindness and cruelty? Can we pay attention to our internal sheep that wander all over, that live peaceful lives punctuated by pouncing mountain lions that tear it to pieces? Paying close attention, Moshe sees that bush is burning and not consumed. And so we too, here now, are in a moment in history that is consuming. It shakes us to our core and seems to threaten all that is precious. So much fear, anger, sorrow, so much death and destruction, so much anger and hatred. And so, actually, as a historian, I should know better. I should know that this describes too many moments in human history. Too much of our so-called human history, because we indeed act like the wildest of animals. And yet, when we sit together with all that and more, we allow the narrows of Mitzrayim to ease a bit in the light of awareness. We sit still together, whether with the trivia or the depths of being. No words, just knowing, breathing in, and knowing, breathing out. You can do it now as you listen to this. Maybe there is noticing that in the silence and stillness, there are offerings of healing, of discovery, of recovery, of inquiry, that are our triumph in this life. And in this way, we commit together to heed the call to go back down into Egypt to free the slaves. The parasha offers a glimpse of the possibility of deepening our relationship with the Holy One of being. Moshe asks God, "When I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' they will ask, 'What is that God's name?' Or in Leonard Cohen's words, 'And who shall I say is calling?' And God says, God's name is Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh. I will be what I will be, or I am that I am." Can we see that inside of each of us as we sit and pay close attention? Our meditation opens within us possibilities of new intimacy with what is unfolding within and around us. Rather than be only caught up in endless struggle and endless stories of what goes on in our lives and in the world, we return with curiosity and kindness to the endless story of what I want and don't want, to endless narrow preferences. Seeing this clearly creates possibility of resting for a bit in expansiveness, calling out from the narrows to the expanse that contains it all, and allowing ourselves to be known by the one who creates us anew in each moment, who hears our cries and the cries of the world. In our practice, we're strengthened a bit to hear the cries within us and hear the cries of the world And when we allow this unfolding of being to rest in awareness, so much of what we see and feel will be the pain and suffering in this life, in this world. And this parsha contains a great teaching about that, which is, this is the heart of our meditation practice, turning towards this unfolding of being. We see that we are not separate from the what is. If we are part of this divine flow, then our meditation is an expression of this holy one of being, an inquiry into our divine nature in an ever new moment of knowing, being. And we incessantly get to practice God's opening our ears to hear the cries of the world and to bring it some love, to let the tears flow when they want to be released, to let the laughter ring. When we sit together, especially for long stretches, whether over the course of a single day or perhaps several weeks, the body cries out, the mind runs into dark corners or checks out entirely, and we watch and once again bring some patience and love to the unbearabilities that seem to be stitched deeply into everything that is alive. Our commitment to feel our own suffering and the suffering of others turns it into a process of nurturing more love, more patience, possibly more outrage, and more acting on what can ease the suffering of others. Just as Moshe looks at the bush in flames and notices that it is not being consumed, can we look at the fiery stories of our lives and our world that burn within us and around us? When Moshe stops in his tracks to see that bush not being consumed, God calls out to him, "Moshe, Moshe." And Moshe not only hears the call, but he answers, "Hineni, Hineni, here I am here." God then says, "Remove your shoes, for the ground that you're standing on is holy ground," which actually would be a good name for a coffee. Holy ground. So when the world moans, and when we too are in struggle, and when we deepen our practice of hearing the cries of the other and turn towards them, we find a path to Hineni. Hineni, my friend, Hineni. So I want to end this talk with a song that I hope that you'll sing, but I'm sad that we won't hear each other. And I'm just learning it, which is why I also wish I could hear you sing it. It's the song by the Klezmatics. Let's take off your shoes. This ground you're standing on is holy ground. How many people know that? Have you heard that? Okay, we'll see. Let me do this. Okay, I gotta find. How do I shrink this page so I can see my, you can see this page, but I need to see my other page.
I think if you kind of move it, move the dividing between yourself.
Yes, but it looks all, it doesn't look like that, Bobby. It looks black all around. Like I can't move this screen.
No, can you move the dividing line between the screen and the photos, between the share and the photos?
You know what? I'm just going to try to do it without seeing the cords. Very big deal. Okay, so let's see. Take off your shoes. This place you're standing on is holy ground. Take off your shoes. This place you're standing on, it's holy ground. These words I in my burning bush. This place you're standing, it's holy ground. I heard my fiery voice speak to me. This place you're standing, it's holy ground. That spot is holy, holy ground. That place you're standing, it's holy ground. This place you tread is holy ground. God made this place her holy ground. Take off your shoes and pray. The ground you walk is holy ground. Take off your shoes and pray. The ground you walk is holy ground. Every spot on earth I tread around. Every spot I walk is holy ground. Every spot on earth I traipse around. Every spot I walk is holy ground. Every spot is holy ground. Every little inch is holy ground. Every blade of grass is holy ground. Every spot is holy. Every spot is holy ground. Every little inch is holy ground. Every grain of dirt is holy ground. Every spot I work is holy ground. The ground you're standing on is holy ground. The crowd. Oh, there you are all again. I learned that last night. So there's a part of my mind that's still working. They say that sometimes people can forget language, but they can remember to sing. They can remember song, words and songs. We'll see. So now it's your turn. To have a lovely experience of hearing how you are, how's your practice going, what's happening in life, in the world for you, and how is it to be in this practice together?